First of all, it's Memorial Day weekend. And we've had a memorial to Christ already. We're going to have another one at the end of services tonight. But it's also a time for us to remember some of those who have fought so hard for so many things that we enjoy here. And I think maybe the reason for having a holiday like the one we have is not just so that we can show our admiration for those people who have done so much for us, but maybe also as a way to motivate us to emulate the admirable traits that they have, the characteristics that made them heroes, that made them want to do what they did so that we could enjoy what we have. They're role models, and that's good. We need role models. Who is it that we look to for role models? You know, our young people, they've, you know, Kim and Kanye, are you caring about what they do? You know, I don't know. Who do we look to for role models? Usually it's somebody who's famous, and the famous people usually do dumb things. They get themselves into trouble, and so we wonder, who is it that we can look to who's really going to set for us an example, not just of a worthy young person, but somebody I can emulate all my life? And of course, the Bible is full of shining examples of people who lend to us their snapshots, if you will, of admirable traits and characteristics that we need to apprehend for ourselves. Some shine a little brighter. And when we think about young people, the first one that comes to my mind is Daniel. We're going to read a little bit about Daniel. In Daniel chapter 1, the first couple verses tell us that in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. Think for a moment about what a dark time this was for Judah. They had been warned that God was going to send a punishing, conquering army to work his wrath upon them if they didn't straighten up. And of course, they didn't straighten up. And God, true to his word, sent that army, the Babylonians, to them to conquer them. And it was a painful time for them. And what they did was they took some folks out of Judah and took them to other places in the Babylonian Empire where they could begin to expatriate people into their way of thinking. It tells us in verse 3 that the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and of the nobles, youths in whom was no defect, who were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had ability for serving in the king's court. And he ordered him to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. So we see that the king was wanting to form, remold, and reshape young Jewish lads into the image of Babylonian culture. He wanted to teach them all the things about the Chaldeans. He wanted to show them how they lived and what they knew and how they could be assimilated into that Chaldean culture. It tells us, if we continue, the king appointed for them a daily ration from the king's choice food and from the wine which he drank, and appointed that they should be educated 3 years, at the end of which they were to enter the king's personal service. So among them, from the sons of Judah, were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Then the commander of the officials assigned new names to them, and to Daniel he assigned the name Belshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. Every one of the names that we had just read, the Jewish names, in verse 6, somehow referred to God's might or God's glory. They were given new names, Chaldean names, that referred to the supposed glory of the Chaldean gods, the idols that they worshiped. Think about what's going on here. They're changing their names so that they could change their identity. They didn't want them to be known anymore as Jews who worship the God of heaven. We want you to be Babylonians who worship our gods. And so we'll start with changing your names, and then we'll teach you all the stuff that we know so that you can be like us. But Daniel makes a decision. And in verse 8, it simply says that Daniel made up his mind. You may have a version that says he purposed in his heart. You know what that means. Daniel made a commitment. Daniel said, this is what I'm going to do. First, he affirmed it to himself. He affirmed it to his God, and then he affirmed it to the people to whom he had to voice that commitment to. Making a commitment is a rare trait today. We don't usually think of making a commitment as a long-term obligation anymore, because we think so much that promises are simply made to be broken anymore, because we see it so often. We see it in our celebrities. We see it in our sports figures. We see it in our politicians. We see it all around us. Sometimes we see it in brethren. Who is it that is full of integrity? Who is it that really holds to their commitment anymore? I don't know what it was like in Daniel's time, but Daniel is saying, me. I've made up my mind. I've made a commitment. And he knew that this commitment was going to obligate him. But still he did it with purpose, with conviction, and with purity. So how did Daniel make up his mind? First of all, he did it with politeness. Look at verse 8. Daniel made up his mind, it says, that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. Now think about it. Daniel is a kid who was brought over from his homeland. He's put in this new place and he is basically commanded. He is told, you will do this. And Daniel, it says, didn't demand. He didn't demonstrate. He asked. He sought permission. Now, if there was anybody who could have just been indignant and put his foot down and said, no, you can't make me do this, maybe Daniel could have been that guy. But that's not what he did. Instead, it says he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. He tried to go through channels in a respectful way. That tells us something, I think, about Daniel's character. Next, it tells us that he did this with God's help. In verse 9, it says, now God granted Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the commander of the officials. That's important for us. Daniel knew that if he was going to be able to succeed in convincing these officials, he was going to need God's help, because he was doing it for God's honor. He didn't want to defile himself with the food that the Chaldeans were eating, because apparently it was unclean. We'd have to go back to the book of Leviticus to read about what they could eat and what they couldn't eat. But Daniel knew, and that's pretty impressive too. Daniel as a kid knew the laws of God, what God required of him. And he knew that if he was going to do anything to take a stand for God, he was going to need God's help. It tells us in verses 10 and 11 that Daniel did this with persistence. It says, the commander of the officials said to Daniel, I'm afraid of my lord the king, who has appointed your food and your drink. For why should we see your face looking more haggard than the youths who are your own age? Then you would make me forfeit my head to the king. But Daniel said to the overseer whom the commander of the officials had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants. In other words, it tells us that this guy comes to Daniel and says, hey, I don't want to lose my head over this decision that you're making. And yet Daniel says, no, wait, let's just go a little further. Let's just continue. It says, he said to the overseer whom the commander of the officials had appointed over them. He begins with the guy who was directly over him. He doesn't stop. Even though he's already been rejected or refused, he doesn't stop. He says, no, this is really important for me. I've got to persist in this. I've got to keep trying to do what I know is right. And he did it with the willingness to test his faith. Look at verses 12 through 16. Daniel says, please test your servants for 10 days and let us be given some vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be observed in your presence and the appearance of the youths who were eating the king's choice food, and deal with your servants according to what you see. In other words, give us what we're asking for, and then after a while you can compare us with the ones who were eating this choice food, whatever that was. I have a feeling it was bacon. But he says in verse 14, he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their appearance seemed better, and they were fatter than all the youths who had been eating the king's choice food. So the overseer continued to withhold the choice food and the wine that they were to drink, and kept giving them vegetables. Think about it. Daniel didn't just lay his integrity on the line. Daniel laid his life on the line for what he knew was right. He says, test me in this. If you do this, I know that it's going to come out okay. Now, I don't know if Daniel and his three friends were necessarily sweating bullets during this 10 days of testing, but he had something to prove. And if it didn't come out the way Daniel hoped it would, there was going to be some very severe consequences. But look what happens at the end when it all pans out. In verse 17, it says, "As for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom. Daniel even understood all kinds of visions and dreams. Then at the end of the days which the king had specified for presenting them, the commander of the officials presented them before Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and out of them all, not one was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's personal service. As for every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king consulted them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and conjurers who were in all his realm. And Daniel continued until the first year of Cyrus the king." Because Daniel was willing to put himself on the line and say, "Look, I'm going to serve my God, and this is what it's going to take." Daniel was committing himself to a very, pretty big thing here. And the results paid off. He did it. And not only did it spare his neck, it also resulted in benefits for the three others who were with him. And not only that, but for the entire kingdom. It says he was 10 times better at giving advice to the king than all the others who were in the king's service. And for some 70 years, Daniel served that foreign king. And I'm convinced he did it in a godly way, because the rest of the book of Daniel tells us that's exactly what happened. Now, I want to ask this question for our young folks tonight, and for some of us who are not quite so young. What lessons can we learn? All of us have made a commitment to the Lord. When we were baptized into Jesus, we said, "Okay, it's you and me, Lord. I'm going to do what you say. I want to do it your way, because I want to be with you forever. So what do you want me to do? I've made a commitment to you because you made a commitment to me. Now how can I fulfill it?" I think we can do it the same way that we just read Daniel did. We fulfill it in much the same way. First of all, let's talk about fulfilling our commitment to the Lord with politeness. It seems like such a small thing, right? Being polite. But it's something we don't see all that much in our society anymore. We look at the talking heads on political talk shows, and all we see are people screaming and yelling and spitting at each other. Where's the politeness? I don't know if there's ever really a reason to be rude or arrogant, even when you are in the middle of heated debate. Somebody said we can disagree without being disagreeable. I think the Bible bears that out. Rudeness aggravates a situation more than it helps it. The Bible tells us in Proverbs 15 and in verse 1 that a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And you and I have been there before. Have you ever tried talking to somebody who is screaming at you and you scream back? Does that ever make it better? Does it ever calm the situation down? It never does. But you find all of a sudden that you can scream louder than you did just a few moments ago. It just inflames the situation. The Bible tells us in Proverbs 15, later on in that chapter, a hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but the slow to anger calms a dispute. And you know what? The calmer you are, the more difficult it's going to be for somebody to scream at you. But that's hard to do. And that's why the Bible tells us we must do it, because it is hard to do. Self-control, having an even temper, is not easy. But when you show that you can be nice, even polite, to people who are not so nice to you, then you can be more like Daniel. We can keep our commitment to the Lord in the same way that Daniel did, by seeking God's help. What do you want most in the world? Some of you are going off to college and you're thinking about careers, and I'm sure you're thinking about making money, because you got to make some money so that you can live. But is that really what you want most of all? To make a pile of money? I mean, what if you made all the money in the world and, like Jesus said, what if you gain the whole world and forfeit your soul? What do you want most in this life? The Bible tells us that there isn't any higher ambition, there isn't any more noble endeavor than to keep yourself right before God. And if you're going to do that, if that's your endeavor, if that's your noble ambition, God is going to help you do that if you do it His way. The Bible says in the book of Psalms 127, verse 1, "Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it." And I don't think they're talking about building physical houses. I think what he's talking about is the fact that we've got to understand that at some point we're going to have to do it God's way, because that's the only thing that is ever going to really help us weather the storms of life. Look at what Jesus says over in Matthew chapter 7 for a moment. Matthew chapter 7. Go there with me. Matthew 7. In Matthew 7, in his Sermon on the Mountain, Jesus talks about this very thing. He talks about building houses. He says in verse 24, "Everyone who hears these words of mine and acts on them may be compared to a wise man who built his house on the rock, and the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and slammed against that house, and yet it did not fall, for it had been founded on the rock." And then he talks about a man who built his house on the sand, and the winds blew and the rains came and that house fell flat. We sing a kid's song about it, right? But it's a very serious thing. All of us are building houses. We all want shelter. We want something where we can find a refuge from the storms of life. We want to know that there is some place we can go, some place we can hide, something in our lives that's going to give us stability and help. And what is it going to be? Jesus says, it's me. It's my words. It's when you build your house on me, the rock. That's seeking God's help. The Bible tells us that if that's your ambition, God's going to help you do it. He looks for people who are looking for Him. In the book of 2 Chronicles, chapter 16 and verse 9, it says that the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth, that He may strongly support those whose heart is completely His. There's a very key word in there. Anybody can guess what it is? Let me help you. Over and over again in Psalm 119, when you get a chance, go look at that psalm that's all about God's word. Over and over again, the psalmist uses the phrase, "with my whole heart." That's what God wants. Somebody who's seeking Him with their whole heart. That's the person whom God gives the resources, everything that he needs to make sure that that person's life is right. Keep your commitment with God's help. And don't give up. Like Daniel did, do it with persistence. If at first you don't succeed, maybe skydiving isn't for you, right? No, that's not how it goes. If at first you don't succeed, what? Try again, right? Why? Because it may take trying again and again before you finally succeed. Don't give up when you hit a roadblock. Don't give up when you come to an obstacle. Find a way over it or find a way around it, but find a way past it. Don't give up. There are going to be obstacles throughout your whole life. When you're a young person, you're living at home, I know you think you got it rough sometimes, and maybe you do sometimes. It's not always a piece of cake. I understand that. But I'm telling you, when you get out into the world and you have to make some much more difficult decisions concerning your finances, concerning your relationships, concerning your spiritual life, you're going to run into bigger roadblocks than you ever had living in your parents' house. And you're going to find that life suddenly got a lot harder. And I'm not trying to scare you. I'm not trying to make you go home and hide under the bed. But what I do want you to realize is that there's got to be a way to deal with difficulty. And the wrong thing to do is to cower in a corner and just hope that the storm passes. The Bible tells us we've got to be persistent in our pursuit of godliness. We've got to, as Jesus says, well, let's just read it together. Look with me in Matthew chapter 7, if you're still there. In Matthew chapter 7, look with me first in verse 7. Matthew 7 and in verse 7. Jesus says, "Ask. And it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks, it will be opened." I'm not a Greek guy. Mark is more than I am. This is in the present active imperative, right? I looked it up. And what that means is that there is a command that is being given that is to be ongoing all the time. So what Jesus is saying is to keep asking, keep seeking, keep knocking. Why? Because the first time you ask may not get it. The first place you look may not be where it ought to be. The first time you knock, that door might not be answered. But Jesus says that everyone who keeps asking receives. And he who keeps seeking finds. And he who knocks keeps knocking. It will be opened. Persistence is what we need in our culture. We even need it in prayer. In Luke chapter 18, turn there with me for a moment. Luke chapter 18. Jesus talked about this principle of persistence as he spoke to his disciples about prayer. In Luke chapter 18, read with me the first several verses of that chapter. Luke 18. In verse 1 it says that Jesus was telling them a parable to show that at all times they ought to pray and not lose heart, saying, "In a certain city there was a judge who did not fear God and did not respect man. And there was a widow in that city, and she kept coming to him saying, 'Give me legal protection from my opponent.' For a while he was unwilling, but afterward he said to himself, 'Even though I do not fear God nor respect man, yet because this widow bothers me, I will give her legal protection. Otherwise, by continually coming, she will wear me out.' Hear what the unrighteous judge said. Now will not God bring about justice for his elect who cry to him day and night? And will he delay long over them?" Now, is Jesus saying that God is some unjust judge who we got to keep pestering until we finally get what we want? No, that's not what Jesus is saying. He's saying by our continually coming to God and asking him again and again and again for those things we know are in his will, it shows our faith that we believe eventually he will grant our request. Look at the very next verse, verse 8. "I tell you, he will bring about justice for them quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth?" Think about that question. Will he find faith on the earth? Jesus equates faith with powerful, persistent prayer. Persistence is not something you see a lot of in the world anymore. We want quick and easy answers. We want quick and easy accomplishments. But the Bible tells us to be diligent. In fact, in the book of Proverbs in chapter 24, it says, "If you are slack in the day of distress, your strength is limited." Why? Because you limit yourself. You make yourself slack. Who has the power to make you do something? You might, "Well, my parents." Yeah, but really, who has the power? In whose power does it lie? Your own. And it's not just true for young people. It's true for all of us. Sometimes we say, "Oh man, I wish I knew the Bible like so-and-so." Well, you can. It's not going to be easy. He didn't get to know the Bible by being slack about it. He studied. He spent hours. He gave up television shows or maybe doing something else so that he could sit and study God's Word. "Oh man, I wish I could do this like she can." You can, if you're diligent about it. We know that lesson. The Bible tells us, in Proverbs 24, that a righteous man falls 7 times and rises again. I think what that may refer to is the fact that we realize that sometimes we're going to stumble. But when we pick ourselves up and we look back at that which we stumbled over, and we say, "I've learned something from that, and that's not going to trip me up again." And then we move on. And it may be something else. And then we stumble again. But we get up, and we say, "I've learned my lesson from that, and that's not going to be a problem for me again." And we continue going, because the more we do it, the more we learn. Somebody told me that Thomas Edison, it took him, I don't know how many times, 2,200 times or something like that, before he finally got the light bulb right. And they said, he didn't fail 2,200 times. He learned 2,200 times how not to make a light bulb. Well, that's kind of what this is telling us, right? A righteous man falls 7 times. A righteous kid maybe stumbles 7 times, but gets up again and again and again. Keep your commitment like Daniel did, with the willingness to test your faith. In 1 Peter chapter 1, turn there with me. We're going to read that in just a moment. And when I say test your faith, please understand that what I'm talking about is not testing God, but being willing to do what Mark told us this morning, to stretch yourself to trust God more. In 1 Peter chapter 1, let's begin in verse 6. The scripture says, "In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you've been distressed by various trials." Now stop there for a moment. Who here has a perfect life? I don't see any hands going up. Okay, George has a perfect life. Great. I want to be George. Because my life is not perfect. And I bet if George were honest about it, he would say, you know what, there is something in my life that bothers me, that needles me. And there are probably some things that I wish were better. All of us deal with something. And it's different for all of us. But it's still a trial for all of us. And it doesn't matter how young or how old you are. Life is tough. That's why it's not for sissies. It's for people who recognize that there are challenges to be met and are willing to rise to those challenges. Let's continue. Verse 7. "So that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And though you've not seen him, you love him. And though you do not see him now, but believe in him, you greatly rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, obtaining as the outcome of your faith." What kind of faith? Tested faith. What kind of faith? Faith that has been stretched. What kind of faith? Faith that has been challenged. What kind of faith? Faith that has been challenged and met those challenges. Obtaining as the outcome of your faith the salvation of your souls. Now let's make some application. To our younger kids who are still in junior high, middle school, high school, I bet one thing you hate is people telling you what to do, right? Because they're everywhere. Somebody's always telling you what to do, right? Authority is everywhere. You know what? Authority is everywhere for me too. How are you going to respond to that authority? With rebellion, with stubbornness, or with politeness like Daniel? Maybe, just maybe, you've got a different idea than what that authority is telling you to do. Is there a way that you can voice your difference without being rude and unseemly? I think there is. We can take a lesson from Daniel and seek permission to do things differently. And I want to tell you this too, young people. When you make it seem like it's your parents' idea for doing that thing differently, they're going to let you do it because they think they thought of it. Okay, I'm not telling you to deceive your parents, okay? But you've got to realize that there is a right way to approach authority when you have a difference with that authority. For our college-age kids, for those young people who are either going to college for the first time this year, or maybe have already got a year or two or three or four under their belt, you're realizing that for the first time in your life, you don't have mom and dad who are looking over your shoulder, and they're not always making sure that you're doing the right thing. You got your own choices to make, and you know what? You may be able to get away with some things that you could never get away with before. What are you going to do? Are you going to get away with those things? You know, freedom from home does not mean freedom to sin. More than ever, when you get away from the restraints and the authority of parents, more than ever, you need God's help. You need to seek him in all those ways to make sure that he comes first and to have him help you get through the difficulty of making hard decisions so that those hard decisions don't turn into dumb decisions with hard consequences. To the adults among us who were in the workplace, you found this out already. You're going to be tested. Your faith is going to be tested. You're going to be tempted to compromise your convictions. You're going to be tempted to slide ethics under the rug. You're going to be tempted to put your job before everything and everyone else, your family and your God. What will you do when you're tested like that? Will that greenback become a bigger God to you than the God who rules in heaven? Will you pass that test? Older adults, when your body starts to decline, we read this morning in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 12, that poetic imagery of a body in decline. But when it happens to you, it's not all that poetic, is it? When your body starts to wear out, it's hard to take. But will you be the one to encourage the next generation? Or when you're just feeling spiritually wrung out, lethargic, it's hard to serve God when you just don't feel like it. When you're fed up with this situation or that situation, and you look around you and you say, well, that person isn't doing so good. Why do I need to work so hard? Unfortunately, sometimes we pick the worst example to emulate. What about when you're just feeling discouraged? When you feel that others around you just aren't giving you the support that you feel you need? Are you going to have the persistence of the young Israelite named Daniel? You can make your commitment, and you can keep your commitment the same way that Daniel did. You can make your commitment and keep it with politeness, with God's help, with persistence, and being willing to stretch your faith, because that's where you grow. Be a Daniel. Young people, show us old people that we can look at one kid's faith, your faith, and be very impressed. Let's open our psalm books together. We have the opportunity now to think about what we've spoken and to realize that, just as the song reminds us, it's all in God's hands. And we can let it rest securely there if we let it. If you need to respond to the gospel invitation, this is your time. Please come now while we stand and sing.